Okay, any, if you decide that you just want to read the words quickly and we should get on with the more classic, perhaps, Chayvus Halvavos, we can do so. Whoever wants to Shar HaBechina on their own could do it. If we don't, I don't know. Mrs. Manrix, you're in charge of this class. Mrs. Manrix, so you tell me, if the women feel that they'd rather not spend so much time going to a biology class, and that's not why they come to Chayvus Halvavos, the people that are here love it. I'm thinking of the people that are not here. No.
There's a man dancing at a bus stop this morning. I don't know why. He's dancing at the bus stop.
Oh. So we're in Chayvus Halvavos, Shar HaBechina, the second Shar of the Sefer. We're in Perek Hamishi, where Chayvus Halvavos himself goes through various things that we have. Chayvus Halvavos, Chayvus Halvavos wrote a Sefer. We could study the Sefer. So in the Sefer there are two words, Bahaloshon Ludaber. And we thank Hashem for our tongue with which we talk. And then you go on to the next words, which are V'hapeh le'echol, and the mouth to eat. So we could do that and just learn the Sefer, but then we're not doing anything the Sefer says. We're just learning the Sefer and maybe taking a test on it and getting 100, and that's wonderful, but it has nothing to do with life. It has nothing to do with what the Chayvus Halvavos wants us to do. Chayvus Halvavos wants a Sefer to be used, and so I'm trying to introduce a little of the using into the class, into the shir. There's so much more, and this is such a tipa shebiyam. It's almost. The Gemara says that an Amora is a very important Gemara when you're learning Shar HaBechina, maybe. The Gemara says that there was an Amora. We say Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Hanora. So we praise Hashem basically with three adjectives: Hagadol, Hagibor, Hanora. Okay, Kel Elyon. So there was an Amora that Davin Shmona Esrei, and he said Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Hanora, Baha Amitz, Baha Amazing, Baha Unbelievable, Baha, and he went on with adjectives describing Hashem. So when he stopped, Abaye, I think it is, asked him, are you finished praising Hashem? You mean you stopped, so you mean you finished praising Hashem? And the point of the Gemara is that really it's impossible to praise Hashem. It's impossible to depict and to describe all of the attributes of Hashem. They are limitless. So therefore, what should we do? On one hand, like this Amora, if we launch into an entire description, so then we'll stop. And then the question is, oh, you stopped, you mean you finished? You gave a whole litany of things, and now you're finished. So we can't do nothing. So the Gemara says, we limit ourselves to what Moshe Rabbeinu and the Nevi'im used. And the Gemara goes on you could delve into the Gemara for its deeper meaning as well. But even on a shitchiistic level, on a superficial level, the Gemara says, so you know what? We use the descriptions that we find in Nach, and that's all. Like, we just say that. So here, you want to thank Hashem in the same vein, although not the same thing, because here I'm talking about the tongue and the nose and the mouth and the teeth. The truth is, when I stop, but it's a joke to stop, as I say, and I'll say it again, and I'll repeat it again and again and again and again. The two words that the Chayvus Halvavos says that we spend maybe 7 minutes on or 10 minutes on, and I'm always have this fear in my head that people are bored or they're not what they came for. But you could study it for 6 months easily. You can study nothing else. But you could study the attributes of the tongue I didn't have time today to prepare properly for the class in the way I would like the class to be. Just by the tongue, I did a little. So you just type into Google how the tongue works, or what do we use the tongue for, or the functions of the tongue, or what do we do with our tongue. And, you know, you have a million things to look at instantaneously, which is also pretty amazing. So I always take the first five. That's all you need. The first five will keep you busy for 6 months. So, I say a little. Chassid Lubavitch said two words. He was okay, because he didn't mean to do that here. He just meant to give you a list. And then he wants you to study the tongue. And it's as Rabbi Victor Miller, you now have an obligation to study the tongue. Rabbi Victor Miller writes, if you would go over to the biggest Talmidei Chachamim and you would ask them, did you ever thank Hashem for your tongue? Many will admit that in all, I'm reading from Rabbi Victor Miller now, it's from a tape, a transcription of a tape. Many will admit that in their whole lives they have never once thanked Hashem for their tongue. Ordinary people certainly don't do it. To know, so you have to learn Chavis Halvavis, to realize that it's an obligation to study the tongue and everything the Chavis Halvavis mentions, and he doesn't mention the pancreas, and he doesn't mention the gallbladder, and there's a lot of Eivorim which in his day, in the medicine of the Chavis Halvavis, they thought was superfluous. They didn't know about it, or they didn't know its function. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they thought tonsils were totally superfluous and served no... They still claim that the appendix serves no function and has nothing, right? So we know better. So we do a little, and then you stop. But really, it's an avera to stop. But then we would never finish. Ein lanu afilu, we say, and anachnu maspikim lahodus l'cha Hashem elokeinu v'lokei avoseinu. We could spend 6 months thanking Hashem for our tongues. And then you would have to thank Hashem for your tongue. That gives you the ability to thank Hashem for your tongue. So, yeah. So imagine what a responsibility that places on us. If the Chavis Halvavos expects that before Google, and before encyclopedias, and before printing presses, right? We're talking a few centuries before the printing press was invented. He expects people to go study. What did he want them to go? To go to university? I mean, the Rambam knew medicine. They knew the human body. I don't know what he wanted. What do I care? What I have to say is that if I just have to press a button, one button, one click, and that gives me enough information to study for 6 months easily. I'm minimizing how much information is there. And it's all, and everything that's been discovered in the physical world in the last century or two, explosion of knowledge, tremendous explosion of knowledge about the physical world we live in. So it certainly obligates us. So it just obligates us. Whether it obligates us to use Google, I don't know. But it certainly obligates us to study it and to thank Hashem. Now, we have to move on.
So, you know, I just also wanted, you just mentioned it just now, talking about this function, and what else?
Just type in any sentence you want. What does the tongue do? What do we use the tongue for? How does the tongue work? Just type in any such phrase, and you'll get like 1.5 million things on your computer, and you just take the first five, that's all. Take the first five. The first three are going to be your exact phrase. It's going to be, whatdoesyourtonguedo.com. Really, I have done this enough already to know. Out there there's, and some of them will only have 2-3 sentences, but you go to the first five, the first six, the first seven, and you'll hit like, it's just mind-boggling. And it's not mind-boggling, because Hashem is mind-boggling. Hashem is infinite. One more point that's an important point. The Maral wrote a sefer about Yetzias Mitzrayim, Gevuras Hashem. Maybe you've heard of it, maybe you haven't. It's an amazing work. And it's all about Yetzias Mitzrayim. If we start learning it the day after Sukkot, we would not finish it by Pesach. It's very deep, very philosophical, semi-Kabbalistic. Maral, if any of you have ever learned Maral or ever heard Marals, it's just, Maral is almost has become like a basis for so much of the Musar that we learn nowadays, and Michtam Elio and Sefsei Chaim and all the Sfarim or Biruchim and the Altar from Slabotka. The Maral is like a foundation stone. Anyway, this first chapter in Gvuras Hashem, he asks the following question. He says, why do we say, and this is very relevant to what we're learning, why do we say, Kalamar b'lasaper b'tzias Mitzrayim harezeh meshubach, that the more we talk about Yitzias Mitzrayim, the night of Pesach, the more laudatory it is, because we're talking about how Hashem did this and how Hashem did that. Isn't that a contradiction to the Gemara I quoted you before? That you're not supposed to praise Hashem too much, because you can't. You can only do too little. So if you do more than the minimum, and then you stop, so then Abaye asks him, oh, you stopped? You mean you finished? So the only answer is you do the minimum. And the minimum, because you do the minimum, and the minimum is what we find, the words that we find used in Tanakh. So the Maral asks, how could we say, Kalamar b'lasapa b'tzias Mitzrayim harezeh meshubach? Why isn't it a contradiction to this Gemara? Why isn't it a contradiction, though, to the concept of the Gemara that you should not do that? It's almost a chutzpah to Hashem. It's minimizing Hashem's greatness. So the Maral answers, it's a very important answer, and it's nogea what we're learning Chayvus Halvavus for, because you'll see how beautifully it fits into the Chayvus Halvavus. He says, if you want to just praise Hashem and talk about how great Hashem is, then the Gemara kicks in. The Gemara is right. The Gemara, we can't describe Hashem's greatness, so we limit ourselves to the words Moshe Rabbeinu used. But if you're expressing Hakaras HaTov, when you're expressing gratitude, your purpose is not to come describe Hashem's greatness, but you're coming to say, I am grateful to Hashem for doing this, and I am grateful to Hashem for doing this. Then says the Maral, certainly the more you express gratitude for, the better it is. And you're not coming to describe Hashem, which can't be done. You're coming to be grateful. And you're saying, I'm grateful for my mouth, and I'm grateful for my tongue, and I'm grateful for my teeth, and I'm grateful for my pancreas, and I'm grateful for my hair, and I'm grateful for my eyes, and I'm grateful for my ears. And that's nothing. This is all a tipa shabiyam. You can go through your whole body, and then you have to start with the world and the sun and the moon and the stars and gravity, and then you have to talk about memory and forgetfulness and Ein Sof, right? So there is Ein Sof, and gratitude is Ein Sof, and you have to do your most to express gratitude. The reason this is relevant to what we're learning in Chayvus Halvavus is because the Chayvus Halvavus is telling us to learn Shar HaBechina as a, remember I say the Chayvus Halvavus sets it up as a bridge. It links to Shar HaYichud. It's a way of seeing Hashem in the universe, in the world, seeing that Hashem is real. When you see complexity and design and planning and programming and the most amazing, 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 like you see a mini computer so we have, obviously someone built it, someone made it, someone manufactured it. The world is a billion times more complex, and a cell is a million times more complex than anything. So you see Hashem, so it links to Shar HaYichud, and it links to Shar Avodas Elokim, which is the next Shar, because you're supposed to use it to develop a... Okay. Okay, so your homework assignment is to write a paper about why you did not get hurt. What protected you from getting hurt?
Sorry.
No, listen to me, I'm punishing you. You write a paper about what in your body protected you from getting hurt. A sense of, no, you have 3 weeks. You kept your balance, basically. You didn't fall on your head. Something cushioned your fall. Instinctively you put out your hand to break your fall? What? That's amazing, right? You have to think all the amazing things that happened to you that you didn't get hurt. Then I'll make you write a paper about why you fell. What happened?
The seat was up.
No, that's just.
I don't mean why what Avera you did. I don't mean that. That we don't know. Okay, so it links to Avodas Elokim because this is an exercise in Hakaras HaTov, and this is why we should. Chavis Avodas says many times, there's nothing that could be going on in our lives that can take away from 95% of the gratitude we feel to Hashem for everything He has done for us, no matter what's going on in our lives. And that's why he wrote Shaar HaBechina, if you remember. He wrote that one of the reasons he's writing it is because when things are not going pleasantly for people, because life is full, everyone's life is full of sorrows, is full of problems, full of bumps, and people tend to focus on that, and then they get all depressed, and they're angry at Hashem, and they're resentful, and why is Hashem doing this to me, and etc. And he's writing Shaar HaBechina because there's nothing that could be going on that could take away from the gratitude we feel to Hashem for all these things that we are describing. Okay, so we're up to V'haloshon L'daber, which is the tongue, for the purpose of speaking. So I said I didn't prepare properly for today's class, and I apologize for that, but I did manage to do the tongue. So the Chavis HaLovis talks about the tongue in terms of speaking, but I'll read you. The tongue, by the way, is the strongest muscle. The tongue is a muscle, and it's the strongest muscle in the human body. That's because we exercise it the most. It helps you speak. It helps you eat. The tongue is one of the most amazing muscles and organs of the body. It is the only muscle we have that's attached only at one end, so it can move like no other muscle. And this is important for some of the work it does. When we speak and produce a variety of different sounds, the tongue automatically assumes a variety of forms and positions to enable us to make those sounds. Just say the alphabet slowly and notice the different positions of the tongue for the different letters. The mucous membrane that covers the tongue plays a part in the taking, holding, and grinding of food. In fact, the surface of the tongue is like a combination of graters, rolling pins, kneading boards, brushes, rakes, and points that act on the food particles we take in. The tongue is also one of the most delicate organs we have, connected with the sense of touch. It is constantly telling us things, reporting on changes that take place in the mouth, sending messages to the central nervous system about what we're eating and drinking. Finally, of course, our taste buds are located on the tongue. The surface of the tongue is covered with little bumps that look like tiny warts. They are called papillae, and the taste buds are located in the walls of these papillae. Man has 3,000 taste buds. A cow has 35,000. A whale has few or none. The number depends on the taste needs of the animal. Of course, the person writing this did not believe in Hashem. Man's taste buds are able to register three different sensations: sweet, salt, and bitter. They may also register sour, but this is possibly a combination of the other three. The appearance of your tongue can reveal a lot about your health. The color, texture, moisture of the tongue can indicate anemia, dehydration, and kidney problems, to name just a few. If your tongue is pale, your tongue should be pink. If it's pale, it indicates that your blood is lacking hemoglobin, especially if the tongue is also extremely smooth. You may feel tired and lethargic. Make sure you eat iron-rich foods. If your tongue is red, it suggests that the tongue is inflamed, and this is due to a nutritional deficiency in iron and B vitamins. Purple can indicate high cholesterol levels and poor circulation that results in stagnant blood in the tongue. This is the result of lifestyle, diet, and medication. Purple.
What is it?
If it's purple, high cholesterol levels and poor circulation. Texture. A healthy tongue should be smooth in appearance, gently moist, with visible taste buds. He talks about all sorts of things. You got to hear this. The Chinese hold, they believe, to this day, that each area of the tongue is connected to specific internal organs. The sides of the tongue reflect the health of the liver. The tip of the tongue reflects the health of the heart. The center of the tongue reflects the health of the spleen. And the back of the tongue reflects the health of the kidneys. That's what the Chinese medical sheet does hot. Okay. Do not keep your tongue stuck out to look at it. I'm just finishing reading here. For more than 15 seconds. After 15 seconds, tension in the tongue will cause the shape and the color to change. So you lose it after 15 seconds. And anyway, then at that, by that point, someone will think you're sticking their tongue out at them. The Chavis will talk later about eating, and he'll attribute it a lot to the mouth and the teeth. But the tongue really, so he puts the tongue as speech, and we know that speech is Vahi Adam Lanefesh Chaya, L'Ruach Mamalallah, that's the way it makes a person. We talk about Shmiras Haloshon, right? Shlomo HaMelech, Chaim Umovis B'yad Haloshon, that's talking, is. So you have to thank Hashem for your tongue, and that's what's talking, and that's how you thank Hashem, and that's how we talk, and sometimes there's a speech impediment, and we need a rapport. The tongue itself is a miracle, superbly suited to its function. It's very supple, with the ability to turn and twist as necessary to fulfill its purpose of speaking, which is the greatest distinction of mankind. Then Rabbi Avigdor Miller says, of course it's not only for speaking, it's essential for eating, as it is for talking. Without the tongue, a person could not eat, and so human life is dependent on the tongue. He claims the Hebrew word lashon is from the word losh, to knead, K-N-E-A-D. When a person eats, the tongue kneads the food and mixes it with saliva to be digested in the mouth. Then the tongue pushes it back towards the molars to be ground up, and then the tongue pushes it back even further to be swallowed. And again, he talks about, now he goes off about talking about modem anachnu loch, thank Hashem for your tongue, and that's what he says, ask people if they ever thanked Hashem for his tongue. Okay, we'll go move on. V'hapeh le'echol, a mouth, which is of course the instrument of speech, is also a laboratory and the factory for the processing of food, and that's how the Chavis Halevis talks about it. If we were to swallow chunks of food without first processing them in our mouths, we would become very sick. The esophagus, through which the food enters the stomach, is a comparatively narrow tube which can only handle food after it's been ground up in the mouth. In addition, fountains in the mouth open up to squirt saliva with various enzymes into the food so that it begins to go through chemical changes. Remember, your food has to be broken down. There's a factory in your body. You eat an apple and somehow this factory produces, whether it's sugar or starch or vitamin A or B or C, and sends each thing to the aber in the body that needs that. These are factories that go on. So that process starts in the mouth. It begins to go through chemical changes as part of the digestion process before it's even swallowed. The digestion, which is this process of converting food into chemical that the body needs to survive and to live on, and each aver needs something else, starts in the mouth before it's swallowed. One enzyme works to change the starches in food into sugars. That's why the longer we chew on a piece of bread, the sweeter it becomes. I did not know that. Okay? That means I know, just when my mother yelled at me not to swallow my food. The starch in the bread is being changed into sugar. The saliva contains many other enzymes, as well as antibacterial compounds to help protect the teeth. The saliva contains mucus for the purpose of greasing the food so that it slips smoothly down the esophagus into the stomach. How can food go down such a narrow pipe so easily? It's greased. Each of the components of saliva is produced by a separate set of glands. The mouth is a veritable factory designed by Hashem to efficiently prepare food before we swallow it. Even before we put the food into our mouths, the glands spring into action to start squirting out the various components of the saliva. Through the action of all these chemicals, the food is partly digested and ready to slip easily into the stomach. And so we must thank Hashem for this beautiful arrangement, a factory without which we would be unable to eat. We can't put food into our ears or eyes. Only the mouth is equipped to do what needs to be done to food before it can be absorbed by the body. And therefore, we thank Hashem that we have a mouth. There are people in the world who must be fed through a tube into a vein intravenously. They're not getting the benefit of natural nutrition, and they require extra forms of nourishment, because the body was designed so that all the nutrients in the food, together with the digestive enzymes from the saliva and the various chemicals exuded by the walls of the tubes through which the food passes, should mix en route as the food goes down to the esophagus to the stomach. After being processed by our bodies, the food that comes into our mouths becomes the hair on our head. It becomes our skin, it becomes our muscle, it becomes our bones, it becomes our nerves. Every part of our body is replenished by the food. So when food enters the body through the mouth, it's a tremendous bracha for which we have to thank Hashem. We'll move on, but it's like an aveira. Like, really, each thing is so... V'hashinayim lilos, teeth with which to chew. The teeth and the way they are designed deserve our gratitude. I should have brought Dr. Stern here to lecture. And he could lecture for hours about the wisdom in... I don't mean the wisdom teeth. By studying the teeth, we learn to recognize the purposefulness of Hashem's creations. And looking at the teeth, we immediately know this, that the sharp teeth are always in the front, never in the back. In looking at thousands of mouths, dentists have never come across sharp teeth at the back of the mouth. Remarkably, the sharp teeth are positioned in the front to enable us to bite off morsels that are the right size to chew. The teeth in the back have rough surfaces on top because they're made for grinding. That's pretty remarkable. Why should they have rough surfaces? And why are the rough surfaces only on top and not on the sides? We should not take all this for granted. We should appreciate the planning involved and realize that it was made that way intentionally by Hashem for the purpose of chewing food. Hashem can be seen everywhere. Now he goes over, because this is really Chazar on Chayvus Halbov. This is a transcription of the tapes. So the body is the closest place to look for Chizuk that we see Hashem. That's what we saw in the beginning of this Sha'ar. No, in the beginning of this Parak. He said he's going to go through the body because that's closest to the person. When we look at the teeth, we see they are coated with a very strong enamel. Where does that enamel come from? It is one of the remarkable products that are created from the food we eat. The enamel lasts a long time in protecting the teeth from corrosion by the acids in the food. When we bite down, the power exerted by our jaws is so strong that even the toughest food can be chewed. The same mouth must be prepared to handle a wide variety of food of different textures and must be able to identify and spit out bones or sharp objects that may be present in the food. So when we see how a mouth works, cutting, tearing, crushing, grinding, we are seeing the cooperation of various kinds of teeth, front and back. There are four types of teeth, each of which has its own job. The front teeth, incisors are used to cut food. The cuspids located next to the front teeth at the corners of the mouth are used to tear food. The bicuspids located directly behind the cuspids crush and tear the food. The molars are the last teeth in the back of the mouth and are used to grind the food. The tongue operates as a messenger, darting back and forth as it moves the food among the various kinds of teeth, as the food is cut, torn, crushed, and ground up. In the meantime, the saliva is squirted down from various sources, not only to soften the food, but to pre-digest it with chemicals. A mouth is a wonderful system. Every mammal has a perfect set of teeth. It goes on. In ancient times, when people lost their teeth, they were in big trouble. A person can't live on liquids alone. People without teeth died young. Sometimes they had other people chew their food for them. It wasn't so tasty when food was pre-chewed in other people's mouths, but they couldn't live otherwise. In the present day, there are substitutes for teeth. False teeth are an invention that Hashem put in the minds of people, and they're truly a chesed. Elderly people can get a new lease on life. They can continue to chew and enjoy their food and live much longer. So we thank Hashem for our natural teeth and our artificial teeth. The author says later in Shaar HaBechina, all inventions are a gift from Hashem. We have to realize that. Hashem put an idea in. If you read up on any invention, it was almost always discovered by like accident or serendipity, or they just, he left the beaker there overnight and he came back in the morning and he noticed something. But it's tamucha, if you look closely at the word it's tamucha, you'll see the word stomach. That's the right, you'll see in Hebrew it's tamucha, stomach. If you ever come across that word in Hebrew and your Hebrew is lacking, see, and that's stomach. Levashel, to cook the food, he calls it. Among the miracles of the stomach is that it uses a very powerful chemical, hydrochloric acid, to digest foods. This concentrated acid is able to break down even the toughest meat so that it becomes liquefied. The stomach acid is so powerful that a person putting his finger into it would get a skin burn. So the big question is, why doesn't the stomach itself burn? Why doesn't the stomach digest itself? The answer is not simple at all, but we understand that there is a miraculous arrangement here. The lining of the stomach contains special, right? Again, because the stomach needs to have this powerful acid to break down all the food. So why doesn't it consume itself?
Sometimes it does.
Right. When you don't have this, the lining of the stomach contains special cells that continuously secrete a protective bicarbonate solution that neutralizes the acid. In some individuals, so that's an ace. In some individuals, with too much worry or excitement, the defense system does not work perfectly, and the lining of the stomach weakens, allowing for the direct contact of the acid and the stomach, and that's how you get ulcers. But you can have ulcers on your feet too. An ulcer just means a hole in your body. So even though we have an explanation, it's still a miracle. The stomach doesn't burn itself up, even though it's able to digest stomach, even if it's able to digest meats that a person has eaten. Only one. That's all. I'm telling you, you could. I didn't have time. It just goes on and on and on. The hakaved, liver. He, in the days of the Chayvus Halvavus, they only understood the function of the liver to be what he calls to purify food. However, now I'm reading from Rabbi Miller, we know now that the liver performs many essential functions in the body. More than 500 vital functions have been identified with the liver. And I'm sure there's more by now. All the blood leaving the stomach and intestines pass through the liver. The liver processes the blood and breaks down the nutrients and chemicals into forms that are easier for the body to use. The liver has been called the miracle laboratory of the body. It is saturated with blood containing all the nutrients and chemicals processed in the laboratory and then distributed throughout the body. In fact, the liver holds about 1 pint, 13% of the body's blood supply at any given moment. An important digestive function of the liver is to produce bile, which is a greenish watery fluid that is necessary to promote the absorption of fats. When the bile is not needed for digestion, it backs up into the gallbladder for storage. When food containing fats passes out of the stomach, it mixes with bile to help the intestines process the fats. Thousands and thousands of different products are made from food and distributed by the blood. He gives one example out of thousands. Carotene, from which hair is made. When we see a young girl with very long hair, do we think, where did all that hair come from? It came from the food that she ate. The skin is constantly shedding its cells. Where do the new cells come from? They come from the food that we eat. The body is constantly wearing itself out, and every minute it is being replenished by new materials. The bloodstream distributes all these materials, including all kinds of chemicals and every kind of healing medicine. Thousands of different substances are made from the food we eat. The liver is one of the most important scenes of this transformation. It is the place where the blood gathers together all the freshly processed materials. This is like, in other words, this is like the main post office. This is the main post office where all the mail goes to, and then it sends it out, each to its destination. It is the place where the blood gathers together all the freshly processed materials and sets out to distribute them throughout the body. Without a liver, a person couldn't exist. Yet even if a small part of the liver remains, it is able to perform the function. This is well known. That's a miracle. If the surgeons find it necessary to cut out major parts of a person's liver, he is still able to exist because what remains takes over the function of the entire liver. The entire liver is not superfluous, it just did the job better. That little bit of liver that remains gets busy and does more than it did before. It's one of the miracles of Hashem that our bodies adjust to emergencies. Okay, back to the words of the Chovas HaLevavos, for Hasimponos, this is like very rudimentary, because we're getting to an area which in the days of the Chovas HaLevavos, they just didn't know about it. Like he doesn't mention, I say, he doesn't mention the gallbladder, he doesn't mention the pancreas. What? Well, the Chovas HaLevavos doesn't write about it, so maybe he didn't. He didn't, I don't think he... Okay, that's not... Okay. He either did or he didn't, but he doesn't have any words here that describe the gallbladder. So the rabbi is just even more than he writes about. He's just giving you a list to study. Right? You're supposed to go study it. So he just mentions, Rabbi Miller mentions that he doesn't have these two things on the list. So the gallbladder and the pancreas. Tubes, simponos means tubes. Lahotzi hamosoros, to carry off the waste products of the body. Vahakisim, that's the pockets. Lasovlom, meaning to temporarily hold them. That's the bladder and the colon that holds temporarily, because you have to hold it temporarily. I mean, how would a person live if it wouldn't be held temporarily? Right? Because people who are ill and it's not functioning properly, they taka, can't go, they have problems. They're always running. What pushes the food from the stomach through the intestines, and what prevents it from backing up into the stomach? The heart doesn't push the food, the heart pushes blood. The entrance from the stomach into the small intestine is controlled by a powerful one-way valve or sphincter muscle. A purposeful arrangement which operates automatically, like all of our internal organs. The food is pushed through the small intestine by an amazing process of muscular contractions, always working in only one direction. It is this amazing tube, which is 5 or 6 meters long, that most of the nutrients from the stomach are absorbed into the body. The large intestine, or colon, comes after the small intestine, and it is approximately 1.5 meters long. By the time the digested food matter has reached this tube, almost all nutrients and 90% of the water have been absorbed by the body. As it moves through the colon, most of the remaining water is removed, and the matter is mixed with mucus and bacteria to become feces for evacuation. The bacteria which live in the colon break down some of the fiber for their own nourishment and create waste products, which in turn are used by the cell lining of the colon for nourishment. Through a marvelous combination of muscular contractions and one-way valves, the waste matter inches its way gradually towards the exit. And they contain a lot of bacteria and a lot of poisonous material, and therefore Hashem made that they should smell and be disgusting to people, so that this is like probably the most disgusting thing we can imagine, because it's full of poisonous wastes. So just instead of putting up a sign, danger, biodegradable, hazardous material, and putting it in a box with a red thing, so Hashem made it smell, and Hashem just made our natural disgust to it. Now in the olden days, as part of the grand plan, people relieved themselves in their garden and fields, which is exactly where the waste was intended to go. All the waste materials were then recycled back into the earth to fertilize the soil. Today, a great deal gets lost when fertilizer is washed down into the rivers. But Hashem waited until mankind invented artificial fertilizers and then gave them the invention of toilets to wash away the feces. Animals were a major source of fertilizer. Typically, a whole herd of animals would be brought into a field and allowed to remain there. If you go to some kibbutzim here, you know that this is true. Allowed to remain there for a day or two until the field was fertilized with their manure. They couldn't be used for anything else, so this makes them valuable to agriculture. The sphincter valve on the rectum holds the feces back. This is what he says, kisit, to hold it temporarily. When the body is ready to expel waste, it miraculously experiences a strong urge. Without this phenomenon, you couldn't have a dignified society, right? If it would just come out when it's supposed to come out, we couldn't sit anywhere, we couldn't sit at a meeting, we couldn't talk, right? It's a miracle. It's a miracle that the muscle... Imagine coming to a wedding or to a meeting of important people and your body would suddenly start expelling the waste. Hashem designed the body that it gives the person a message and then it's up to him. His brain thinks it over and he waits until he goes into a private place. That's a miracle. Up to that point, all of the functions of the digestive system were automatic. You didn't have to think about it. You didn't have to make a decision. It worked automatically. It's only when it's time to expel the waste that the conscious brain takes control over that part of the body that does that. And the same is true for the process of urination. It's also a miracle that the brain, which is in the head, expels the feces by activating a lower part of the body. It's obviously unhealthy to wait too long before responding to the urge, and if the urge is suppressed, it takes longer before it returns. But you can hold it in check till you reach a bathroom. But miraculously, when he reaches, then the brain allows it. Urination is the most necessary function. When there's an obstruction, it's life-threatening. And urinary obstruction is very dangerous. Hashem made a very complicated system to remove waste materials from the blood by means of the kidneys. Each day a person's kidneys processes around 200 quarts of blood to sift out about 2 quarts of waste products and extra water. The waste and extra water becomes urine. This organ is essentially a small bag that stores the urine until the person is ready to urinate. We're going to stop here. He goes on, but I am always like totally amazed that your urine, they have tests and they could see what's going on in your body from there's blood tests and there's things that's a mace. That's a total mace. They look at your blood and they see, this is a problem with your body, this is a problem with your body, and they can look at your urine. The Chinese can look at your tongue. By the way, I once saw, when I was much younger, on television, I saw that there's some people that could look into the eye and they could see like different parts of the, like just like he described that the Chinese hold, not he, or that was from Google, that the Chinese hold different parts of the tongue will reflect the health of different parts of the body. So there's a thing in the eye also, that different parts of the eye reflect the health of different parts of your body. Okay, we'll stop here. This, yeah.